Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to AeroTech Corporation Fourth Quarter 2016 Earnings Results Conference Call. All lines have been placed in a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions from analysts only following the presentation. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to reach a live operator. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to Yaakov Haroz. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you, operator. I would like to welcome everyone to AeroTech's fourth quarter 2016 earnings call. Hosting the call today are Dean Cruddy, our Executive Vice President and Acting CEO, and Tom Popp, our Chief Financial Officer. Before I turn the call over to Dean and Tom, I'd like to remind everyone that this conference call may contain projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future performance of the company. These statements are only predictions, and there can be no assurance that they will in fact occur. AeroTech does not assume any obligation to update that information. Actual events or results may differ materially from those projected, including as a result of changing market trends, reduced demand, and the competitive nature of AeroTech's industry, as well as other risks identified in the documents filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In addition, certain non-GAAP financial measures will be discussed during this call. These non-GAAP measures are used by management to make strategic decisions, forecast future results, and evaluate the company's current performance. Management believes that the presentation of these non-GAAP financial measures is useful to investors' understanding and assessment of the company's ongoing core operations and prospects for the future. Unless it is otherwise stated, it should be assumed that any financials discussed in this conference call will be provided on a non-GAAP basis. Full reconciliations of non-GAAP to GAAP financial measures are included in the early earnings release. And with that, I'd like to now introduce AeroTech's Executive Vice President and Acting CEO, Dean Cruddy. Dean, the call is yours.
Thank you, Yaakov. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. During the fourth quarter of 2016, AeroTech continued to restructure its corporate overhead costs to streamline our ongoing operation. Our board negotiated a settlement with our former CEO, which, while adding approximately $1 million to Q4 operating expenses, will yield significant savings going forward. We will continue to streamline our cost overhead structure as we pursue promising growth areas for the company. We are pleased that, despite a revenue decline in 2016, we were able to improve our margins over last year and at the same time retain our commitment to investing in our future growth technologies. While Tom will detail our financial performance in a moment, I'd like to provide insight into our revenue shortfall in 2016. Our military vehicle simulation segment of our training and simulation division is down significantly from our peak several years ago, and we have been unable to forecast accurately the timing of new awards in this segment. This led to our difficulty in providing an accurate range for revenue guidance last year. As I highlighted last quarter, we look forward to the continuation of our work with the U.S. Army on their VCTS product line, which has been our most significant program in this segment, and we expect to be under contract very soon for phase two of this important program. Turning to our divisional results, I'd like to begin with our power systems group in Israel, which is made up of our water-activated battery company, Electric Fuel, and our Epsilor subsidiary. 2016 represented the fourth consecutive year of growth for this group, and with the discontinuation of the flow battery effort that we announced last year, we have achieved improved profitability. While our flow battery effort held promise, we felt that the path to shareholder returns was too long for a company of our size and makeup. We are instead pursuing promising new projects with shorter timelines, such as lithium-ion replacement batteries for existing lead-acid solutions. This market continues to improve as lithium-ion cells continue to fall in price, making lithium-ion a more compelling solution. As an example, we are working closely with the Israeli Defense Force to design a replacement battery for their lead-acid battle tank batteries, which is the same configuration used in tanks around the world, as well as a lithium-ion alternative for their military auxiliary power units. We are also working on new conformal battery developments for soldier war applications. The IDF is helping to fund these developments, and we believe the potential is near-term and significant for Epsilor. In 2017, we expect Epsilor to be quite steady as they produced the 70,000 batteries put on order last year by the Israeli MOD for the MR2791 and MR2790 batteries. In the fourth quarter, we worked on qualifying a new plant in southern Israel to produce these batteries, and we are currently in full-rate production on the MR2791 using a new design that is more efficient to manufacture. At Electric Fuel, 2016 marked another year as the dominant player in the water-activated battery business, supplying approximately 80% of the batteries used by the aviation life vest market. We expect this to continue. In 2016, we invested in a new design for our most significant product in this space and also expanded our offerings to the marine market for Life Vest lights. In the United States, our power system subsidiary, UEC Electronics, posted top and bottom line growth in 2016 as we continued to improve our operational efficiency. Our fourth quarter, however, was not as profitable as expected as we decided to invest further in our development efforts relating to hybrid power solutions. This is work that we believe will have significant future payback. The bulk of our revenue the last 2 years at UEC has come from our contract manufacturing operation, which supports a wide variety of customers, from small medical device companies to large defense contractors like Raytheon, to direct sales to the U.S. military. This is very competitively bid work for the most part, with commensurately tight gross margins. It is our decrease in operating expenses for our U.S. power group, partially attributable to our consolidation of our U.S. power operations, that has led to improved U.S. power earnings. Our research and development at UEC last year focused on hybrid energy products like MEPS and distributed power control systems, a product called DPCMS, that we are developing for the U.S. Marine Corps. While these programs are supported by multiple contract awards, they remain largely developmental programs as we enter 2017, with low-rate initial production quantities of DPCMS expected to be on order by Q4 of 2017. We are happy to announce 10 days ago the receipt of a $3.4 million order to support U.S. Army CERDEC in developing a grid energy storage system for their energy-informed operations program. This will maintain continuity for our hybrid power engineering team as we advance these developments, and further protect our technology lead in this important product area for the armed forces. Outside of the hybrid power and distributed power control products that UEC is developing, the fourth quarter marked increased interest in our soldier-worn integrated power system, SWIPES, both domestically and abroad, and also advanced important opportunities around support of the CSAS-2 electronic warfare system that UEC manufactures for the Marine Corps. Turning next to our training and simulation business, our training and simulation business produced lower than expected revenues for Q4 and for calendar year 2016, as I explained in my opening. Margins generated by this business came in higher than we anticipated and well above 2015, however. Our product mix and contract performance combined to deliver strong earnings, a characteristic that has become common for our simulation group. In 2016, the performance of our training and simulation business was buoyed by the performance of our air warfare simulation group. This group continues to add staff and actively support all the fighter aircraft in the U.S. inventory with weapon employment queue software. The recently announced award by the U.S. Air Force of a $9.5 million IDIQ to our FAC subsidiary, which will allow us to support F-16 launch zone software into 2023, is an indicator of the kind of long-term stability that we expect from this group. Within our vehicle simulation activity, our military vehicle group has continued their excellent performance on the Army's VCTS program and completed several important upgrades to increase the system's capability and ensure that its simulated equipment is representative of the evolving technology delivered to the actual route clearance teams. Our commercial vehicle activity grew in 2016 as we continued to innovate and market our commercial systems. While this segment is historically smaller than our other three simulation business segments, it is an important technology incubator that keeps our products and our staff's capabilities current to the state of the art. We benefit from the synergy between this group and our military and research applications. Our municipal sales were up in 2016, and we successfully expanded our public safety product offerings to include a simulation of a fire truck's pump operator station that was unveiled at the annual Fire Chief Show. Our Milo group, which provides use of force solutions, had a strong sales year in 2016, setting a new high watermark for Milo sales. This led to solid 2016 revenue results and positions us for further growth in 2017. As in the prior year, this strength is built on a large number of small orders opposed to one or more large awards that would have more typically led to this sales level. We have a very solid pipeline headed into 2017 that does include several larger opportunities that we believe could make 2017 our strongest year to date for our Milo group. Before I turn the call over to Tom for a detailed review of our financial results, I'd like to make a few remarks about outlook and guidance for 2017. As a reminder, our guidance is provided as of today, and we undertake no obligation to update our estimates in the future. Furthermore, the outlook we are providing includes only organic growth opportunity, and it does not take into account any potential acquisitions. Given our current visibility, we expect to achieve year-over-year sales and profit improvements in 2017. Specifically, we expect to generate revenue of $93 to $103 million, adjusted earnings per share of 20 to 24 cents per diluted share, and adjusted EBITDA of $7.5 to $8.5 million. With that, I'd like to now turn the call over to Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Thanks, Dean. For the fourth quarter, revenues were $21.5 million compared to $27.4 million for the comparable period in 2015. The year-over-year decrease was driven primarily by delays in receiving and executing new orders in the Simulation Division military vehicle arena. Gross profit for the fourth quarter was $5.6 million, or 26% of revenues, compared to $8 million, or 29% of revenues for the prior period. Operating loss for the fourth quarter was $1.7 million, compared to an operating income of $1.2 million for the corresponding period in 2015. Operating expenses were $7.3 million in the fourth quarter of 2016, compared to $6.8 million in the quarter a year ago. Fourth quarter 2016 expenses included a $1 million negotiated early separation cost with our former CEO. Total other income for the fourth quarter was a loss of $191,000 compared to a loss of $233,000 for the corresponding period in 2015. The company's net loss from continuing operations for the fourth quarter was $2 million, or a loss of 8 cents per basic and diluted share, compared to a net income from the continuing operations of $702,000, or 3 cents per basic and diluted share for the corresponding period last year. Adjusted earnings per share for the quarter was 1 cent compared to 7 cents for the corresponding 15 period. Adjusted earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, adjusted EBITDA, for the fourth quarter was approximately $807,000 compared to $2.6 million for the corresponding period in 2015. We believe that information concerning adjusted EBITDA and adjusted EPS enhances our overall understanding of the current financial performance. AeroTech computes adjusted EBITDA and adjusted EPS, which are non-GAAP financial measures, as reflected in the tables of yesterday's press release. For the full year, 2016, revenues were $93 million compared to $96.6 million for the full year of 2015. The year-over-year decrease was driven in large part by the delay in receipt and execution of the new orders in the Simulation Division. Gross profit the year was $28.2 million, or 30.3% of revenues, compared to $28.1 million, or 29.1% of revenues for the prior year. The improvement in gross profit was due favorably to product mix delivered by our Simulation Division. The operating income for full year 2016 was $214,000. Compared to operating income of $286,000 for the full year 2015. Operating expenses were $27.9 million compared to $27.8 million for the prior year. Total other income for 2016 was a loss of $910,000 compared to a loss of $1.2 million in 2015. The company's net loss from continuing operations for 2016 was $1.5 million, or 6 cents per basic and diluted share, compared to a net loss from continuing operations of $2.1 million, or 8 cents per basic and diluted share, for the corresponding period last year. Adjusted earnings per share for 2016 was 17 cents, compared to 11 cents in 2015. Adjusted earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, adjusted EBITDA, for 2016 was $7.1 million, compared to $6 million for 2015. Our backlog of orders as of December 31st, 2016 totaled $55.4 million versus $63 million for the same period last year and $55 million from the prior quarter ending. The Simulation Group had a backlog as of 12/31/2016 of $18.8 million compared to $29.8 million as of 12/31/2015. Our Power System Division had a backlog as of 12/31/2016 of $36.6 million compared to $33.2 million as of the same time last year. Moving on to the balance sheet, as at the end of the year, 2016, the company had $7.4 million in cash and cash equivalents as compared to the end of the year 2015 when the company had $10.7 million in cash and cash equivalents. As of the end of the year 2016, the company had a total debt of $13.5 million, consisting of $3 million in short-term bank debt under our credit facility and $10.5 million in a long-term loan. This is in comparison to December 31st, 2015, when the company had debt of $20.3 million, consisting of $4.1 million in short-term debt and $16.2 million in long-term loans. The company also had $8.8 million in available unused lines of credit with our primary bank as of December 31, 2016, under a $15 million revolving credit facility, and a $10 million term loan and a $1 million mortgage that were secured by the assets of the company and the company's U.S. subsidiaries. The company had a current ratio, computed as current assets divided by current liabilities, of 2.0 at the end of the year, 2016, compared to 1.9 for the same period last year. As of December 31, 2016, Aerotech had a net operating loss carryforwards for U.S. federal income taxes of $46.9 million, which are available to offset future taxable income, if any, expiring in 2021 through 2032. Utilization of U.S. net operating loss is subject to annual limitations due to the provisions of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 and similar state provisions. The company accrued $837,000 in non-cash tax expenses in 2016, reflecting the uncertainty of the deductibility of intangible expenses for federal income tax purposes. This concludes our prepared remarks. Before we open the call up for a Q&A, I would like to remind all participants that Dean and I are regularly available to the investment community throughout the year, and we look to participate in relevant conference and investor events, which we webcast. We plan on filing our 12/31/2016 Form 10-K later today. Operator, you may now open the call up for questions from analysts.
Thank you. The floor is now open. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Please hold while we poll for questions. And it seems we have our first question from Mike Crawford. Please state your question.
Thank you. Could you please provide some of the segment level detail for Q4, like sales and EBITDA, if you can, for the two segments?
That will be coming out later today, Mike, in the queue, but FYI for everybody, the power supply division did $12.3 million for the year.
You asked for a Q4, Mike?
I got it. It's coming somewhere. I picked up the wrong sheet, Mike. I wasn't anticipating your question. All right. Let's see.
Maybe while we dig for that,
I've got it for the year, but I don't have it handy for the
for the year would be fine.
For the year, do you want the segments for the year?
Yes.
Okay. Training and simulation revenues were $46.4 million, with a net income of $77.6 million. Power systems division is almost the same, 46.6, with a loss within the power division of $656,000. That's net income, or net loss.
Okay, great, thank you. So, Dean, you talked about the distributed power program moving from development to LRIP. Could you frame that opportunity? I think it's like $100,000 per vehicle revenue opportunity for the company, and what would be the addressable market there?
So in the near term, Mike, and you can look up the AAV survivability upgrade that the Marine Corps is doing. There's a lot of publications on the timing of it. It's currently going through field testing and water testing. We anticipate the first LRIP quantity of 22 systems to be on contract by the September timeframe of 17. The second LRIP, which is a 30 system by January of 18 currently, and then to be in production by summer of 18. Right now that's around 300 systems.
Okay, thank you. And then another program that's going to be moving, well, that UEC has been developing, these mobile hybrid power systems.
Right.
So is that something that, I mean, in the past you've talked about that being a $100 million opportunity. Would that be what, Army and the Marines?
Well, right now we're working on a development for the Marine Corps, and we just announced the first contract to do development for the Army. The Marine Corps is certainly well ahead with their development. We expect to be in test this summer with the units we're developing under contract to the Marine Corps right now. That opportunity probably gets to production next summer. We think initial buy would be in the neighborhood of $20 million, with half of that probably falling in the second half of 17. I'm sorry, 18, and then. You know, depending on who you're listening to at the Marine Corps, that could be $20 million a year for a number of years after that. I think the Army opportunity is less mature. We just began our development on that, but certainly the Army could have a very, very high need for the same type of systems that the Marine Corps is already fielding.
Okay.
And then there's foreign military sales and, you know, Homeland Security applications as well for this kind of power equipment.
Okay, thank you. And then for 2017, you've given a $10 million range of revenue, and how much of that is gated on timing of VCTS award? I assume that that you are baking in a win of that extension into this guidance. Is that correct? And then how does that timing affect this range you've provided for 17?
Yeah, absolutely. We have baked that in. We feel very strongly that we'll have an announcement out in the next couple of weeks on that award. We have another significant military award that also will affect that that's expected probably at the beginning of Q3, that will have some influence on that. But then also these amphibious vehicle systems getting to LRIP in the fourth quarter. I think, Mike, if you look at our profile for 17, we'll be building all year, unlike 16, where we had a bit of a letdown at the end. 17 will start slower. We'll add on the VCTS work at the end of the quarter here, I believe. And then with the LRIP starting in the fourth quarter, I believe we'll be looking at a profile that grows through the year and into next year.
Okay, thank you. And then so it sounds like from that you're expecting 18 to be stronger than 17. And the last question is another program we've been tracking is the Common Driver Training, which seems you would be well positioned to get back on when that actually comes up. For RFP, which supposedly is supposed to be third quarter of 17.
Right.
And is that program shifting into a format that looks more modular, similar to your VCTS program, or what's the status of the Common Driver Training?
Well, I think the Army continues to try to evolve to the best systems that they fielded. We believe a lot of the features that we built in VCTS will be included in the specifications that the Army has for CDT. Certainly, we're watching and responding to all the RFIs that the Army has had to date, working closely with them. But we certainly feel like we should be very well positioned for that award, having done the bulk of the work on the original contract. And also with our strong performance that continues on VCTS, we certainly think that we're doing a lot to influence the requirements of that program.
Oh, okay, just to finish out that thought, the last document I've seen is they're looking at that as a $112 million funded program. Is that just for the Army, or would that also include anything for the Marines?
No, I believe that number would include the Marine Corps being involved, and I assume you're going to see that number go up and down a lot over the next year as they refine exactly who's going to fund what and get that on contract.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mike, just this time again, I want to get back to you on that fourth quarter question.
Mm-hmm.
The power supply revenue was $11,650,000, a net loss of $570,000, an EBITDA of $185,000 positive. The simulation was $9,840,000, with an income of $1,094,000 and an adjusted EBITDA of $1,420,000.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Jim Moreau. Please state your question.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question in regards to that revenue drop, particularly in the third quarter. So from what I understand, it was from a loss of revenue in regards to contracts, particularly in the military vehicle simulation. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, I'm just trying to get a sense of that drop in revenue. So is it more attributed to perhaps budget cuts from the military end, or is it due to losing to bids from other competitors?
It's actually due, Jim, more to the timing of awards. The two primary awards that we had figured into our military vehicle revenue for last year, neither of which has been awarded yet, are both funded programs, just a matter of getting them on contract. The biggest one, of course, is our VCDS program we've talked a lot about, and we think we're very close to signing a contract there. But there's a second program as well that's in our pipeline that is funded. It just needs to get on contract.
Okay, so it's more of a timing issue, so we can expect perhaps a bump up from that segment in 2017?
Right.
Okay, great. And my second question is in regards to your adjustments to get to adjusted, I believe, EBITDA.
Okay.
And so I believe it's in regards to the compensation, the stock compensation expense. So I see a big bump up from $146,000 in 2015 to $1.3 million in 2016. So is that attributed to the compensation awarded to the ex-CEO, or is that attributed to some other expenses?
Are you looking at the EBITDA reconciliation?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Okay.
And you have the asterisk there. You have the asterisk in which it states that it's in regards to stock compensation expense.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there are the biggest adjustment that goes into there is the fact that we have our contract buyout for our former CEO.
Okay.
Okay, we've adjusted for that in the EBITDA. I would think that you would as well. It's a one-time,
right.
As we suggested, is $1 million.
Yeah, I think, Jim, there has been no change in policy regarding stock comp to the board.
No, the stock comp is highlighted if you look at the adjusted EPS reconciliation, you can see the stock comp year over year. It's up slightly because we added board members in 2016.
Right. Okay, so we shouldn't expect a large compensation again like that in 2017, other than compensation for board members or anything of the like, right?
Correct.
Okay, great. That gives me a better sense.
Okay.
Thank you, and that appears to be our last question.
Thank you, operator.
This concludes our conference today. Thank everybody for calling, and thank you for attending. And we look forward to a very good year for us next year, and hope you will be part of our process. Thank you.